So one day I was sitting around at home, wishing I could set my face on fire instead of write a song. It happens to songwriters sometimes. And I was reading the funny paper. At the bottom of the column, at the bottom of the page there, on the right-hand side, was the following quotation. The trouble with trouble is, it starts out as fun. That meant something to me. I thought, I can write that. So I did. It all started with a shotgun back in 1973. When my daddy got a brand new 12 gauge, gave his old one to my brother and me. And we went out shooting stop signs one night when he was working late. And that's how I learned the meaning of a misdemeanor at the ripe old age of 8. But daddy, it wasn't even my idea. I did it on a double dog ear. And it's a cold hard fact when you're young and dumb. The trouble with trouble is it starts out as fun.
Okay. Well, that's by way of introduction to this week's topic on listeners' voices of youthful mischief or things you never told your parents. So could you relate to that, Michelle?
Oh, completely. Completely. That was so nicely done.
Yeah. So this is Michelle Miller, my co-host this week. Welcome.
Thank you.
Not her first time co-hosting and certainly not her first time on air.
Right.
AWH, you've been with us from the very first week. Probably the very first day, I imagine, you were on the mic on our opening day, right? So this is Listener's Voices, episode 45, and we put out an idea or a question and ask people to submit written or recorded responses, and we have a few today. So if you haven't listened before, we want to be sure you know how to participate, because that's really the point. We're trying to get more listeners to participate. And we have an email. It's ktwh.org that you can send your written submissions to or recorded voice memos from a smartphone are easily emailed. Or bring them into the studio here. And we do actually have an anonymous submission this week that was brought into the studio, and you're more than welcome to do that as well. Studio, of course, in the Harbor Landing building. So anything else people should know before we get started here? I guess that anonymous ones, submissions are welcome, and also previous prompts are always open for response. And you can find out what a lot of those are by visiting the website ktwh.org. Under the programs drop-down, the last 3 or 4 months of our programs are archived there, so you can get an idea of what happens here.
And it doesn't need to be a real long submission. You know, it can be a minute to 4 minutes or, you know, so
right.
Don't feel like, you know, you need to put a lot of time and energy into this. The ideas for the free-flowing ideas, and that's really what comes up with some of the best material.
Right. And actually, we haven't put any time limit on yet because we haven't had any problem with long submissions. And I think we actually had one once that was 12 minutes. We wouldn't encourage a lot of those, but it was worth it.
Yep. Hey, yeah. If you're getting into it, we don't want to, you know, stop the creative juices.
Right. Yep. So we have first, sometimes we have late submissions, and we usually take those at the beginning of the show from a previous show. And we did indeed. Katya Gordon was inspired to send this in for the coincidence, serendipity, synchronicity episode that we must have just had last time, I guess. No, last time was privacy and personal space, but so this is from a couple shows ago.
Yeah.
But we will share this first from Katya.
Inspired by your show this morning. Thank you so much. I have my own story of serendipity, which started I guess it happened about close to 10 years ago. We were sailing on Lake Superior with a group of young teenagers and young adults, and it was rough sailing. I remember that well. There was seasickness. We were way up in the north part of Lake Superior heading for Rossport, which is kind of the highest point, highest town other than Nipigon in the lake. And this is in northern Canada, in Ontario. And it was bumpy, rainy, windy. And I remember that we were making a heroic effort to get north, somewhat against the wind, because we had a presentation to do in Rossport at the restaurant, which was called Serendipity. And for those who don't know, we do these presentations about Lake Superior as we travel on Lake Superior on a sailboat. And we talk about different things that are threatening the lake, like mostly focused on climate change and the effects of climate change on things like invasive species. And we do this with our crew, who are young people. And anyway, we had a date. And so as we were getting close to Rossport, with great effort, I called the person who was our contact person for organizing this event and found, much to my dismay, that he had done very little. And I think he had actually left his job. I don't remember the details, but I remember it took me a while to piece out that he really had not done anything to market this event that we were making such great pains to get to, and that probably nobody was going to show up at this restaurant, which was really the only public space in Rossport. So I was somewhat upset about that and just felt kind of bummed. We took the wind out of our sails, so to speak. But we did get to Rossport, and as usual, we took the few minutes of transition, meaning to get out of sort of wilderness mode. We're all in our foul weather gear. We're hungry. We're cold. We're tired. But we have a presentation to make. So we turned ourselves into civilized human beings. And I don't remember how long that took. And then trooped over to the restaurant, Serendipity. And it's a small restaurant, but we set up our projector. That's how we did it back then. At the far end, and we sort of rearranged the tables, and we were there in time because we had worked really hard to be there on time. And lo and behold, there was nobody there at the presentation to see us present. So we sat down and started to drink our ice water and wondered what to do next. Well, just then, who should walk in the door but David Tambly, who was an old friend. We had had contact with him before, long before when we had small children, because he owned the kayak outfitting place in Rossport. But in more recent years, because he was also the superintendent of all the schools between Nipigon and Wawa, which is a huge area, but very sparsely populated. So there were several small schools in there that we had been to doing our sea change presentation. And in some ways, it turned out to be the most efficient use of our time to do stuff up there, because we only had one person to contact. And we had contacted David, and he had said, sure, I'll set up presentations in all the schools. I think there were four of them, elementary, middle school, and high school. And he had driven us around another year on his van, in his van, to do these presentations. So he was already a hero for us. And he walked in, and we told him the situation, and it's a small world up there, of course. And he did not see this as a problem at all. And there were several people in the restaurant, and he basically went around to all of the people that were sitting at the restaurant eating their meals, and he said, he knew them all, of course, and he basically invited them with a real nudge to come on over, and there's a presentation happening, and it's something that you need to come see. So eventually all the people in the restaurant either turned their heads to watch us or brought their chairs over, and we did our presentation, and it felt like great serendipity, great name for the restaurant, for our event, and a really good chance to really just speak to the people who are here rather than people who already would want to do something like this or someone who might, people who might already be focused in the same way we were. These were just, you know, regular people that I think they probably learned a lot, and we ended up having a really good time. So that's my story.
Serendipity at the Serendipity Cafe.
Right.
How about that?
That is very, very cool. And I like how she said that they weren't like-minded people already. You know?
Yeah, not singing to the choir necessarily.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Getting
exactly.
An actual cross-section of real people.
Yeah, but probably really made an impact. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool.
Very cool. Well, so moving on into the subject of the week, youthful mischief, things we never told our parents, and we both thought of the same song. We'll kick this part of it off with a song, I guess with this short version from Pete Seeger, because sometimes some of these stories parents were aware of at the time, some not, some actually kind of involved in the story. But out of compassion for the parents and being a parent in this kind of role, we'll share this little tidbit from Pete Seeger.
Be kind to your parents, though they don't deserve it. Remember that grown-ups is a difficult stage of life. They're apt to be nervous and overexcited, confused by their daily storm and strife. Just keep in mind, though it seems hard, I know, most parents were children long ago. Incredible, so treat them with patience and kind understanding in spite of the foolish things they do. Someday you might wake up and find you're a parent too.
That is so awesome. That makes me think of when my son just turned 21 and he had gotten into some trouble, mischief, and he's like, Mom, you were right about everything. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I was maybe thinking I'd hear that, you know, in 20, 30 years, not this young. I am so, you don't realize how much this is going to serve you, figuring that out this young. So mm-hmm. good for you that he was humbled instantly.
Well, good. I thought this would certainly pertain to you. You did find yourself a parent, and I haven't. So I thought you could probably relate to this mm-hmm. song, and I didn't have to prompt you. Great. Okay. Well, I don't recall the parents' engagement with these mischievous deeds by Richmond, if at all, but we'll find out. This was several days ago I listened to this, and he was up to quite some mischief. But as far as how the reaction of the parents, we'll have to listen and find out again. Here we go with Richmond.
Hello, fellow listeners. This is Richmond, responding to the prompt, My Mischievous Youth, or What My Parents Never Knew, or Did They? Columbia Heights, 1963. I was perhaps 11, 10, or maybe 12 years old. Then there were my friends Alan, Mickey, Larry, and Stephen, also 11 or somewheres thereabouts. Here's where I must offer caution, as I am not endorsing the mischievous acts whose tales be told, nor recommending that anyone try these at home. They were a part of my growing up story. They need not be a part of yours. These three acts mischievous. Story number one. Somehow, one of my friends started up with a neighborhood prank we could do. How we worked up enough lather to go through with it, I'll never know. Alan, Mickey, Larry, Stephen, and I, we participated together in the planning and execution of filling a brown paper bag with dog poo. We saturated the bag with lighter fluid. We ran up to some house in the neighborhood, put the bag of dog poo on the doorstep, lit the bag on fire, and rang the doorbell. I can't imagine we stuck around to witness the results, though I can imagine someone answering the door, seeing the fire, stepping on the bag of dog poo to get the fire extinguished, and getting doggy poo all over them. Thinking back, it was a really crappy thing to do that could have had way worse outcomes than somebody stepping in a fiery bag of dog poo. Second story mischievous. Alan, Mickey, Larry, and I would go down to the neighborhood convenience store to shoplift. We mostly lifted paint for the model airplanes and cars we had purchased. Stephen was not part of this until we three boys told him about it and encouraged him to join in, which he did. One day, all on his own, Stephen went to the store and in his attempt to shoplift was caught. Alan, Mickey, Larry, and I did not know anything about his solo run. Then, one evening, shortly after, I went to Stephen's house to visit him. His mother answered the door. She was enraged as she yelled out the story of how Stephen was caught shoplifting and was in a heap of trouble. He spilled the whole story about us four delinquents who had encouraged him. Other than Stephen's mom banning all of us from ever playing with Stephen again, I don't recall much else. Or do I? Story number three, mischievous. There's Alan, Mickey, Larry, and I once again. This time we go to Stephen's house some night and light a firecracker, and we put the firecracker in the mailbox hanging to the right of the front door. As we ran away, we could hear the sharp crack echoing through the night. Why did we do these mischievous acts? I don't know. What I do know is that Stephen and his mother eventually let the shoplifting incident pass. They accepted my heartfelt apologies with the promise that I would never do anything like that again, and I have not. The firecracker prank was never mentioned. Alan, Mickey, and Larry and I, we didn't see much of each other after that. Stephen and I, though, we continued our friendship. And at some later date, over a lazy summer on his lawn, he taught me how to play chess.
You never know.
That is great. You know, that is exactly like the song that we started this program out with, right. Is that it starts out being fun. And and in my experience for youthful mischievous acts is it's the planning of it and the anticipation of what's gonna happen. And sometimes you do execute it and sometimes you don't. And like with that firecracker, once you do it, you're like, wow, that was really, really stupid. Wow. Really interesting.
Yeah, and let's see, looking at what we have left so far, I think that's probably the most mischievous stories we have to...
Wow.
Yeah, so, well, thank you, Richmond. I'm glad you turned out all right, despite your mischievous youth.
And the storytelling of that was very well done. It was very fun to listen to.
Yeah.
Thanks, Richmond.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's see. Let's hear from Leslie. This is fun. Okay, here we go.
Hello, it's Leslie with a story about youthful mischief. I was in eighth grade and a real skating enthusiast. In Wilmette, a suburb of Chicago, there was an artificial rink for hockey and open skating. It had 4-foot-high wooden walls, a very upscale and huge ice-cleaning vehicle, and a great warming house with a wood fireplace. Hot chocolate and popcorn were always for sale, and it was the best place for me and my friends to meet up and hold hands around the rink. I was into a boy, and we used to meet there. One night, when I was supposed to be at a friend's house, she and I went to the rink without our skates, just to hang out with him. Our entry tokens were at home on our skates, so we had to climb the cyclone fence and sneak in. We proceeded, but in my haste, the upper back leg of my light blue corduroy pants caught the fence and significantly ripped. My skin right there got scratched and bleeding a bit as well. Back over the fence and walking home I went. I crept back into the house and straight to my room to change. The next day, I met my friends at the shopping center to hang there and bought a replacement pair of cords with my copy of the family charge card. My sisters and I often shop for our things, so Dad never questioned that line item on his bill. Over time, my guilt faded, and many years later, I told the story to my mom. We laughed about the little scar I have from the incident.
Yeah, so that's one that she did tell her parents eventually.
Yep.
Yeah, and we were wondering what, so it wouldn't have been a charge card like we have these days, but apparently a department store would have a charge account that you had carried some card for, and she was lucky that not many kids could get away with that, I think.
Right. I know. That, well, it was Chicago, so maybe...
Oh, that's true.
You know,
that's right.
Because there's more stores and retail and, you know, accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
yeah,
there used to be counter checks and accounts and stuff like that. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep. So let's hear a little bit from Iris DeMint about trouble from her album, The Way I Should. Okay, we didn't have time to hear all of Iris there, but...
you get the point.
Right. And,
you know, as I'm hearing these submissions, it's just making me think of, like, the age perspective of what we thought was mischievous, you know, being in the older generation. And, you know, we're all different ages that have done this, but, you know, old enough to have children who have been mischievous or, you know, old enough to... have kind of forgotten about what it's like Leslie being 17, or you know, being in eighth grade. I guess that still is being a child and being mischievous. But I just like the perspective of ages. It'd be interesting to hear a 10-year-old right now and what they think what they're doing is being mischievous.
Right, yeah. Well, and I mean, there's so much potential for actual mischief and trouble these days. As opposed to when we were growing up, certainly.
Innocent fun is what we like to call it.
Right. And so that's an appropriate lead into this one. This was our anonymous submission, and this is probably from the oldest of all of our submissions today. And she does comment on how it was a kind of a different time, some of the differences of those times.
Oh, okay.
An anonymous submission from D. Youthful antics kept secret from parents. At the age of 17, while between semesters at college, my closest friend and I were persuaded by a similar-aged teen, new to our community, that it would be a great idea to have a little overnight adventure in New York City. We lived in a beach community on Long Island, about an hour's drive from Manhattan. We rounded up a fourth for our adventure and were able to borrow my friend's older brother's car, as none of the four of us were car owners. The cover stories were that we were sleeping over at the other's house. I guess we were all old enough to not warrant a check with the other parents. Plus, we lived in a safer, more permissive time, about 60 or so years ago. The adventure started in the evening as we headed off down the expressway to Manhattan, New York City. Our goal target was Greenwich Village. The new friend was an expatriate of New York and knew her way around. Those were also the days when you could actually drive there and find a place to park on the street without paying. It's hard to remember now all the places we went and the things we saw, but we wandered around free as birds for many hours. It's also good to note we had no problems whatsoever. We wandered into a place for some food and drink, probably soda, but I don't remember. We weren't a drinking crowd in that age of greater innocence. Sitting at a four-person square table, our order was taken. We then noticed that there were couples on the dance floor and that they were all women. Our wandering into a lesbian bar, which was not a happening thing in our town, just made our adventure a bit more exotic. The hours wore down and all the places were closing, either 2 a.m. or 4 a.m. licenses for any kind of club with drinks. So it was time to retrieve the car and go home. The new friend from the city also had a supply of diet pills, probably Dexedrine, so we could stay awake for the whole ride home. I thankfully took one as I was the driver. Then another little problem presented itself. 5 or 6 a.m. in the morning is too early to show up at home. That would never have happened after just an overnight at a friend's house. So the solution was to go to the beach, go under the boardwalk, spread a jacket out, and go to sleep for a few hours. Brush off the sand and go home. Hi, Mom. She never, ever knew about it. Thank you, Dee. That was another time, all right.
That is awesome. All the you think you have everything covered, then, oh, yeah, we can't come home at 5 o'clock in the morning. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's super fun.
And I would point out that the lesbian bars weren't exactly a happening thing in hardly
anywhere.
Anybody's town.
No,
I
can't imagine.
It was even before Stonewall. Yeah, that. But I'm not surprised that it existed where they went, but yeah.
So and, you know, surprised. I like that she said that, you know, they were free as birds. And that's, you know, kind of a core, I think, to some of these stories is that you're doing something, you're feeling older or responsible for yourself. And so you're free because you're doing something that maybe saw as being mischievous and you're not telling your adults, but it's, you know, it's that journey of becoming an adult and being responsible and, mm-hmm. and problem solving mm-hmm. and dealing with the consequences.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I thought of some segue or other to my story here. So if I can find it, I think I'll share that now. Okay. I found my couple of stories here from my youth. My first transgressions do qualify as mischief, although I'm not sure that some parents weren't maybe in on the caper. I spent my first 6 years in a little town that time forgot, the proverbial Lake Wobegon in central Minnesota. Then we had to move to Minneapolis. But fortunately, I was always able to spend some weeks back in the small town each summer, at least through junior high school. There was one family with a range of kids about the same ages as I and my siblings, and our parents were best friends. So I stayed with them each year. One attraction of the visit was always apple stealing. Mm. Many homes in the community of 650 people had apple trees in their backyards, and we would stealthily sneak into several yards each night after dark to help ourselves. I don't recall that we collected bags or bushels or anything. The parents certainly wouldn't have condoned that, and what else would we do with so many apples without them knowing? So probably just enough for a snack each night, and they might have known and just looked the other way. What I am wondering is, did we have daylight savings time then? It would have to be at least 9:30 for it to be dark enough to do that now. Only as of 1966 has daylight savings been consistent across the state and across the country. These apple-stealing years would all have been before that, so who knows. But there was absolutely nothing to be afraid of at any hour of the night in a town like that at that time. I can still remember the thrill of the adventure of it, though. The risk of getting caught and embarrassing our parents, but the fun of pulling it off. Now, in retrospect, I wonder if not only our parents, but even maybe the apple tree owners were in on it the whole time and just let us get our thrills from the one or two apples we would take. We'll never know. My second transgression could possibly get me sentenced to probation or worse these days, but my mother did learn about it right away after the fact. Once we lived in Minneapolis, my mother was working a straight work week, 9 to 5, downtown. In the summers, we kids were on our own, as my father had passed away. So we were left unsupervised, except by the older siblings, who were at least 14 and 17 by then. But the eldest was likely working somewhere by this time. So it was me, my brother, 3 years older, who called me Brat, and my sister, who is 7 years older and would have been in charge. She was very responsible. But one day, my brother's shenanigans somehow got to us both, and we ended up tying him up and confining him to a bedroom closet. Seems kind of shocking to think about now. I'll have to ask him if he remembers this. If so, it doesn't seem to have had any lasting effect. He turned out fairly well. That's sarcastic. Turned out very well. But the surprising thing is, when my mother got home from work, she heard about it immediately, of course. I don't think he was still in the closet, but he spilled the beans, looking for sympathy. But he got none. I don't know if that's because she trusted my sister enough to trust her judgment, or she knew my brother well enough to know that it was likely warranted. But she just brushed it off. At least we never had to go to that length again. I guess my brother learned some lesson. So wow. I did ask my siblings today by email if they remembered what they remembered about that. And we do have a little follow-up.
Okay.
So my brother says, "Alas, for better or worse, I don't recall the closet confinement you describe. As you point out, though, it doesn't seem to have had a permanent effect on my psyche, thankfully." And then my sister, who took part in that, says, "Ken, my brother, it's a relief that you don't recall the closet incident. I recall a very similar one, but it took place in the Clarissa house. That's the little tiny town that we had moved from. And I don't remember tying you up, just shutting you in Fran's and my shared bedroom closet. I still have guilt feelings about it. I don't recall anything like that in the Minneapolis house. Isn't that odd how memory is? This is my sister still, and I remember pilfering apples once, but I was in a car with my older brother and a few other teens, and we drove out of town a bit toward the north, if memory serves, and probably grabbed a couple of apples each. Except for shutting my little brother in the closet, apple pilfering was the most serious mischief I remember committing until later years. I was probably about 13. It bothered me then, but no long-lasting guilt. I want to hear about the later years then.
Right, exactly. She keeps us hanging there. What's
oh, well, so here's, well, this is not exactly mischief, but it led to trouble for some kids anyway. Okay, maybe this is what she was referring to. So in later high school years, I was working at a drive-in, which we don't even have anymore, except no. Once in a while there's an A&W drive-in up on the range. I think there's one, as was my best friend. And when we got off after dark, the owner's brother had the job of driving us home. It was a hot, humid night, and we kids, boys and girls, convinced the driver to stop at a swimming beach to let us get a quick dip. He was a softie. We only spent enough time to dive under and get wet, and we gals got our heavy cotton dress uniforms soaked. It felt great. Mom didn't seem at all upset, though she may have wondered why we were later than expected getting home. My friend's parents, however, were very unhappy. They called the drive-in's owner to complain, and my friend had to quit her job. Isn't that sad?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yep. So.
Wow.
Yeah, and so then my brother and sister confirmed who the friend was who had to quit her job. And my sister says, I expect Mr. Deliria's brother, the owner's brother, heard about it too. But I'll never forget how good it felt to jump in the lake or what that heavy, wet uniform felt like. I hate to think what a mess we all might have made of the big old car.
Wow.
And so I responded, you know, when I first started reading this, first time I thought, oh, well, if they had been skinny dipping and hadn't gotten the clothes wet.
Right, exactly. That's what I thought. That's what was happening.
Right, yeah. Wow. So really quite innocent times. It probably
totally.
Didn't even cross their minds.
No, not at all. Just get in and get cooled off.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, but it's funny that, looking back to the apple stealing thing, that just was so exciting. And it was just, you know, such a very minor transgression, but I can still remember kind of the thrill we got from that.
We did that with raspberries. Yep. And it was more of that you were trespassing, and we finally did get caught by the guy. And we're like, all we're doing is grabbing a handful of really yummy, you know. And, yeah, we just thought that, that we were just the thrill of getting away with it. And then, and you just kind of wonder how long, what made it stop? Like for you, you know, it's, you know, the end of the season, then you're too old the next year. But for us, it was like, how long would we have kept doing it before the thrill was gone if we wouldn't have gotten caught and the owner, you know, said, stay off my property? I don't know.
So, well, how about you, Michelle? What kind of tales do you have
what
to tell?
What tales? They're kind of broad, but because when I first saw this prompt, I was really focused on all the tales of the childhood mischief part. And then when I was really putting this into words, then the second portion, the things I never told my parents, was the part I really clung to. Mm-hmm. So, through the years, as we have become adults, my siblings and I have shared many of our escapades with Mom. Instead of being shocked at our confessions, she just quietly nodded and said, "You don't think I knew?"
Ah.
And the incidents and questions were purely mischief. They weren't mean-spirited. They weren't hurtful. They weren't illegal. And for the most part, when we were that age. And they ranged from, we had a hot dog food fight in the dining room, and one of them had hit the ceiling, and so the proof was left on the ceiling. And one of my older brothers, he would bribe us younger ones to do his chores. And, of course, we never saw any of the promised cash. not letting on to Mom either, why we were the ones that were doing all the work. We weren't out of the kindness of our heart, you know, helping him out. And the biggest secret of all, or so my sister and I thought, there was a period where we would be sneaking out of bed in the middle of the night, and we made cinnamon sugar toast.
Ooh, yummy.
I know, we were quite the hoodlums back in the day. But it never gets old retelling the tales when we all get together laughing and Mom giving that all-knowing head nod.
Well, maybe this is a good time to share the Teach Your Children Well.
I think so.
Stills, yep. Nash, and Young. We'll hear a little bit of that here.
Are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh.
That your elders grew by, and so please help them with your youth. They see the truth before they can die.
Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by, them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh, and know they
We ended up hearing all of it, as a matter of fact.
Right. There's not a good spot. It's such a good message. There's really no place to fade it out.
And it's just, yeah, it's a really good song. I always enjoy listening to that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a little poem here from LibriVox that I thought was somewhat appropriate to the show. It's called Bills in Trouble.
Bills in Trouble by James Barton Adams. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. I've got a letter, Parson, from my son way out west, and my old heart is heavy as an anvil in my breast. To think the boy whose future I had once so proudly planned should wander from the path of right and come to such an end. I told him when he left his home not 3 short years ago, he'd find himself a-plowing in a mighty crooked row. He'd miss his father's counsel and his mother's prayers too, but he said the farm was hateful, and I guess he'd have to go. I know there's big temptations from a youngster in the West, but I believed our Billy had the courage to resist, and when he left I warned him of the ever-waiting snares that lie like hidden serpents in life's pathways everywhere. But Bill, he promised faithful to be careful and allowed, he'd build a reputation that might make us mighty proud. But it seems as how my counsel sort of faded from his mind, and now the boy's in trouble of the very worstest kind. His letters come so seldom that I somehow sort of knowed that Billy was a trampling on a mighty rocky road. But I never once imagined he would bow my head in shame and the dust waller his old daddy's honored name. He writes from out in Denver, and the story's mighty short. I just can't tell his mother. It would crush her poor old heart. So I reckon, Parson, you might break the news to her. Bill's in the legislature, but he doesn't say what fur. Recorded by Ray Smith, Phoenix, Arizona.
That is so us. Break her heart. Oh, my. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, yep. It could either be a commentary on what he's done or about parental cluelessness. Who knows?
Right, exactly. Yep.
So we won't add our own editorial comments to that.
No, but just how you envision the future for your children or your siblings or, you know, and then just how, yep. I like the clueness. Yeah.
Well, that's all of our submissions. We do have several more songs we'll probably close out the episode with. But before we do that, we're going to hear something we've been waiting to have time to share. This wasn't a submission. This was actually submitted to the North Shore Journal for their Leave a Trace series. And I haven't seen any of those for a while. I'll remind people of it. They invite people to submit their stories, just any local people, stories about anything. And we do have an agreement that anything that gets submitted to the journal, she will ask if they would like it also to be shared on our show.
Nice.
And we did it the other way around, too. One of our submissions, I suggested that she, it was a written submission, and she did send it to the journal, and it was published there later. So this was from Judith Timke, and she has volunteered with the station before. Her sister Jane volunteers, and Judith spent a lot of time in many countries around the globe in her work life, and this is titled Senegal Stories.
Senegal Stories by Jude Timke. Sensing, smelling, taking in the kaleidoscope of colors and textures, fearless and unfettered, I roamed the Dakar streets that never slept, greeting every passerby with the obligatory, Nanga def? Naka wakargi? Naka khalebi? How are you? How is your family? How are your children? Jamrek. Just peace. Sometimes at night I'd be the only Tubab in sight, the West African word for a person of European descent. There was a favorite jazz bar downtown that I liked going to alone. I'd sit up at the bar, have a flag beer, and relax to the live music after an intense day at work. Once someone came in and sat down on the stool next to me. Within seconds he was hitting on me, and within seconds he had been thrown out on the curb by the bartender. I felt safe. Early mornings on busy Rue Ponty, the young boys propelling themselves by gloved hands, their twisted polio-deformed legs precariously arranged on their makeshift boards on wheels, would shout out cheerfully to me, Madame, Nanga def yao? How are you? And then indignant in French, Madame, where have you been all this time? We haven't seen you lately. We watched the car? No problem. I was without any doubt secure in this informal network of protection as I weaved my way through the chaos of crowded narrow streets, back alleys, small shops, and the cacophony of microbuses and ambulatory street vendors. Sometimes the demands of my unusual job down at the port demanded that I carry very large sums of money in manila envelopes from the bank to my office. Yet often I chose to walk the 8 blocks rather than drive. Often I'd spot Napoleon. We never knew his real name. Walking in the distance, strikingly thin, ramrod straight and kingly in his frayed strands of ancient beads, his natty dreadlocks and tattered rags, his dusty feet calloused and bare, and his magnificent crown of discarded bottle caps and other shiny metal objects dangling in his eyes and catching the sun's rays. He was like a black messiah, occupying another dimension, permanently residing in his world of perpetual motion, only stopping to bend down to collect remnants of someone's cigarette and a scrap of newspaper to roll his own tobacco. Napoleon crossed the Dakar Isthmus several times a day, always moving, never stopping. More than once our paths crossed on a narrow side street. He would reach out with his arm and strike me firmly on my shoulder as we passed each other. I felt blessed.
Wow. Really beautiful writing.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Very nice.
And we really treasure getting something like that submitted in one's own, in the writer's voice,
yes,
too. That's why we like to call this listeners' voices.
Mm-hmm.
And but if you can't do a voice but a written submission, that is more than welcome as well.
Yeah.
Thank you, Judith. And it did make me think of a prompt about safety or security. What does that mean to you, and what has that meant in different settings in the past? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
And right, we all seem to have felt so much more safe in the past. And but yeah, what all goes into that? Right. Well, before we close out with a series of other mischief-related songs, in case people tune out, let's remind them of the prompt for the next episode in 2 weeks from now. This one is airing on March 29th, and so I think it's April 12th is the next one, if I recall. And do you remember what it is, Michelle? You just heard it at the beginning of the show tonight.
Oh, no. I didn't think you set a prompt.
Yeah, I think I did at the very beginning. It's going to be hospitality.
Oh, I must have completely tuned that out. Maybe. Okay, hospitality. I don't know if you said that. I would have.
I might not have.
Yeah.
I had it written on my sheet, but yeah, either given or received.
Oh,
or both.
I like that.
And as something, since I decided that, I have to decide that on the many days early because it has to get into the papers in time. So I don't want to reveal it to everyone until this episode is aired. But since I sent the announcement to the newspapers, of a really pertinent story has come into my life that I will be sharing in the next episode. So we encourage submissions for people, ktwhwriters@gmail.com. written or recorded, and they can also be brought in or mailed in. We actually, the anonymous submission was in an envelope with the P.O. box number, but then she ended up bringing it in person instead.
Okay.
But the P.O. box number is 622. If you really want to be totally anonymous, you can put it to KTWH, P.O. box 622, Two Harbors, 55616, with no return address, and we will have no idea who you are. But if you do email it and ask for anonymity, we certainly respect that. And if anyone finds out who you are, maybe one or two of us might, but we will protect that. So we'll close out here with some random mischievous songs. Actually, maybe only one or one and a half or so. But thank you, Michelle, for joining
Yeah,
me.
Thanks for asking me. This is always just such a thrill to the wealth of experience, talent, and support in this community, however they choose to participate in this community radio production we call KTWH. Just really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and thank you. If the voice sounds familiar and you're trying to figure it out, Michelle is on every Thursday morning the grounds control from 7 to 9. And she has been since day one back in the middle of September 2015. Okay, see you again at the next episode. See you on the radio. Tried to draft me out.
Remember that grown-ups is a difficult stage of life. They're apt to be nervous and overexcited, confused by their daily storm and strife. Just keep in mind, though it seems hard, I know, most parents were children long ago. Incredible, so treat them with patience and kind understanding, in spite of the foolish things they do. Someday you might wake up and find you're a parent too.